Merħba għal-programm Minajnejn Barrani, fejn jiena Colin Fitz niltaqa u niddiskuti pajjiżna ma' diversi persuni ta' nazzjonalitajiet differenti li għal xi raġuni u oħra għamlu lill-Malta bħala id-dar tagħhom. Il-programm jixxandar kull nhar ta' tlieta fit-tminieta fil-għaxija b'repetizzjoni l-ħamis fl-10 ta' filgħodu, kif ukoll jinstab fuq is-sit elettroniku ta' Campus FM. First guest on the program is Aleksandra Radulović. Aleksandra Radulović, who has been in Malta many, many years, but was born in Serbia, which was at the time part of Yugoslavia, and has also lived in various other countries before settling in Malta. So, first of all, let's get you to introduce yourself, Aleksandra. Tell us a bit about yourself, the countries you've lived in, what you do, what your career is.
As you said, I was born in Serbia, in Belgrade. First couple of years of my life lived there, then unfortunately my father passed away, and my mother, who was working at that time as an interpreter, applied for an overseas posting. And when I was 2.5, we ended up in India, lived there for 2.5 years. After India came Iraq, lived there for a good almost 15 years. In between, I came to Malta when I was 11. I did 2 years of schooling here.
And why was that? Your mother sent you here, boarding school of some sort?
That's a very interesting question, because back in Baghdad I used to go to an international school, which was head by the staff of the American Embassy. And I had developed quite a strong American accent, which my mother wasn't happy about at all. Being a linguist by profession, she believes very much in keeping the old traditional languages in their old root form. So she wasn't happy about the American accent that I had started to speak with, and she wanted to get rid of that. So she considered sending me to a boarding school in England. Around about that time, she was having a chat with one of her good friends back in Baghdad, who suggested sending me to Malta instead. Prior to that, we had not heard about Malta, but my mum's friend reassured her that the educational system was excellent. It followed the British system of education. It still is very good. It was a warm climate country, an island, warm climate country, very safe, a good choice of reputable schools, boarding schools as well, and that my mother would absolutely have no problems in being reassured of leaving me here to continue my education.
What age?
I was 11 at that time. Mm-hmm. This was in 1982.
I see.
Not having heard about Malta before, my mother decided to book a 2-week holiday just to explore the island and to see a little bit the places. My mother, also being an avid fan of history, she read quite a bit about Malta and was very intrigued by Malta's rich historical past. So this was an added bonus in helping her to decide to actually do enroll me in the school here. So we ended up here, 2-week holiday first, went around a couple of schools. St. Dorothy's in Indina was recommended to us by my mum's friend. Regretfully, at that time, boarding schools for girls, the boarding side was closed down, so I could only register as a day student. But we went around that because St. Dorothy's recommended another girls' school in Hamrun, Our Lady Immaculate. We went there, I enrolled as a day student, and the principal of the school recommended I stay with a Maltese family. So I was a day student, and I lived and boarded with a Maltese family.
After Malta, you moved to other countries. Let's conclude the introduction.
After Malta, so I did a couple of years in Malta, moved back to Baghdad, back to Iraq, to be with my mum because I was homesick. Or you could say, mum sick.
Did you change the accent? Was your mum happy?
Yes, got rid of that. That was, yes, that's luckily evaporated. It worked, indeed. And then after a couple of years in Baghdad, my mother was posted to Libya. I had reached fifth form, sixth form age. Unfortunately, the oil company school in Libya was past my age group. Sorry, I was past the age group of the school. So basically, Malta was the logical option back again. So I ended up
for
back
high
here.
School.
That's right.
For high school.
That's right. So I ended up back in Malta.
So before we go on about Malta, this is quite interesting. You must have memories of Iraq in the 80s when the Iran-Iraq war was happening and Saddam Hussein was very much in power. And then Libya, the old Libya that we remember now, it's been a few years since Colonel Gaddafi was removed, but that was the 80s when he was at the height of his powers as well. So could you share some memories of living there?
Yes, both Arab countries, but with huge contrasts. Iraq was very, very safe. I, for example, when I moved back there after Malta, was enrolled in a French school. I did 2 years in a French school. I walked to school on my own. I was 13 years old. I walked to school on my own, 20 minutes there, 20 minutes back every day. Not one unpleasant incident.
Mm-hmm.
This was in the center of Baghdad. I would not have done that in Tripoli, unfortunately,
mm-hmm.
on my own.
Okay.
Then on the other hand, yes, for all that the mass media said since the Gulf War happened, we remember a different Iraq. We remember a very prosperous Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
We remember a very safe Iraq. We remember an Iraq where there was a lot of foreign investment. German, Italian, French, American.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the first Sheraton to be built in the Middle East was built by the French and it was built in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
In Baghdad, the first Meridian Hotel to be built in the Middle East was built in Baghdad, built by the Italians.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there was a lot of investment in the country. Saddam believed very much in doing business with the outside world. Unfortunately, the Iran war depleted the country's finances.
It was one of his follies, wasn't it?
Well, it was that, unfortunately, was flung onto him, the Iran war. His folly was going on through it. That was the beginning of his end.
Mm-hmm.
That was his greatest folly. Because, sadly for him, due to America's heavy interests in Kuwait, obviously, since he decided to march on Kuwait and to...
He upset the balance of things.
I
see. He trod on the fleet of powerful interests.
Exactly. And sadly, that was the beginning of the end.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And Libya?
Women on their own. It was frowned upon to see a woman walking in the street on her own. She would ideally be accompanied... And more so by a male person, a lot more traditional.
Even though it's claimed that Colonel Gaddafi was similar to Hussein in the way that the country was quite secular.
I believe this is a bit of a mistaken impression. For example, from the religious point of view, the different religious denominations, Christianity being one of them, were felt much more free to practice their religion openly
mm-hmm.
than one would have felt in Tripoli at that time.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So you would find a lot more churches in Baghdad, for example,
mm-hmm.
and a lot more fractions of Christianity
mm-hmm.
being openly practiced over there than one would find in Tripoli.
Now that you've brought up the religious aspect, do you mind if I ask whether you are a believer in...
I'm Christian, I'm Orthodox by religion, not a fervent, I don't practice it fervently,
mm-hmm.
but my general mantra is do good, don't do harm.
Was there any issue with your religion when you came here?
No, I was...
Or even in Iraq? You don't seem to have had any problems?
No, from that aspect, I was perhaps one of the lucky ones that I have thankfully never had problems with my religion being accepted. But then again, I have also been accepting of the other person's religion too.
Well, it's not tolerance.
Tolerance, it goes both ways. Yes. It does go both ways. You know, my general approach, having lived in different countries, I was brought up to accept other people for who they are, for what they are, and return to expect the same. And overall, generally, that system has worked.
So you decided to come to Malta for good. It was around 17, 18 when you were going to high school, and you have stayed since then.
That's right. Well, the initial plan was for me to finish high school and go to university in another European country. However, as things in life sometimes happen, circumstances dictate otherwise. My mother was at that time employed in Libya, and there were a few issues with her employment contract and everything, and back payments and what have you. So basically, anyhow, the finances were depleted at that time, and basically my mother said, well, you know, I hoped to be able to send you to university abroad, but unfortunately that looks highly unlikely. Being a foreigner at that time in Malta without a Maltese passport, now I have a Maltese passport, I looked at enrolling myself at the University of Malta, and I would have had to pay, obviously, normally, very normal. Unfortunately, the fees were prohibitive for us. So basically looking around and thinking what to do, I got myself a summer job. I waitressed during the summer months. And then, as coincidence would have it, a friend of mine who knew that I was fluent in French had heard of a tourism company who was looking for French-speaking staff and suggested I apply to work as a courier. I didn't even know at that time what the term working as a courier meant. But anyhow, you know, you just plod on and you go. You sometimes plunge into situations and just hope to make the best of it. So I went for my job interview and I was basically told, okay, you'll be tested on Monday. This was on a Saturday morning. We'll test you on the Monday. If you're good, we'll keep you. If not, you know the way to the door. needless to say, I did the test and they kept me for 3 years. Then I moved on to another company and stayed with them for 17 years. After that, it was career change, and I was offered to work in an insurance company, something I never thought was going to be on the cards. If somebody had looked into a crystal ball and told me, okay, this is going to happen to you, and then this is going to happen to you, I'd say, no, no way. That was not how I had envisaged things were going to run their course, but anyhow. So, yes, so currently I work with an insurance company, and I work as a PA to four managing directors.
And you say you have a Maltese passport, so now if somebody asks you, where are you from, what would you say?
That's a very interesting question. People, when they ask me now about my nationality, I say that I'm born Serbian, which is true, and that I do hold a Serbian passport, which is true as well. But I also say I feel Maltese, which is true. And I do hold Maltese nationality, so I have a dual nationality now.
You have dual nationality. Serbia came out of the Yugoslav Federation. There was war and lots of unfortunate situations over the years. What's your opinion of what Serbia and the surrounding area went through over the years while you were growing up?
It's very sad. Wars are very sad, obviously, and totally unnecessary. Definitely. I am sure that the majority of people believe and would prefer that things are resolved through diplomacy, because nobody gains from war except the people who sell the arms, sadly. And obviously it changes a country's demographic beyond recognition sometimes. Sadly, we, as in my family, which is basically my mum and myself, through the civil war, lost everything. everything, yeah, we lost everything.
So it was your home in a war zone, part of the war zone?
From my mother's family side, mm-hmm. yes, they originate from Sarajevo. So basically the family home.
So that's in Bosnia.
Bosnia-Herzegovina, yes. That's right. Mm-hmm. That unfortunately totally destroyed, and all the heirlooms and family possessions and everything was totally gone.
A lot of fighting happened there.
Yes, very sad. But sadly, when you have three different religions and three starkly different religions, tempers sometimes can flare. So you have Islam and you have Christianity, you have Catholicism and Orthodoxy.
I see. So religion was a big part of
the ethnic tensions. Unfortunately, yes. Obviously, external influence does not help.
So there was just external influence as well.
That does not help.
So do you think that it would have been better had these countries, Bosnia and Herzegovina, Serbia, and various other countries in the area, had remained as part of the same country, Yugoslavia, or as a federation, or perhaps loosened up a little bit, but there wasn't need for a war for them to separate in this way? The majority of people were happy living together with their differences.
I have a lot of Croatian friends, mm-hmm. I have a lot of Bosnian friends. Mm-hmm. I don't see them as enemies. Mm-hmm. Our next door neighbors, I don't see them as enemies. You know, the man in the street did not want that.
Mm. Yugoslavia was a very socialist country, communist even, and it was led by Marshal Tito. Do you have any memories or opinions of that era that you could share with us? It was quite an interesting time, shall we say, Cold War and all that.
Well, one aspect that I would like to share, which is a little bit of an ironic aspect, pre the Civil War, during the time when Marshal Tito was still alive, Yugoslavs didn't need a travel visa to practically any country in the world, which says a lot for the diplomatic ties that mm-hmm. existed with other world countries.
So it was not a forbidden place such as to the West, such as the Soviet Union was or Poland was at the time.
Ironically, after the Civil War, we needed a visa to travel everywhere. So it's just that those two huge contrasts that I found, for me especially, very restrictive, for me who loves to travel and explore other countries and get in contact with other cultures and meet different people. I had a hard time adjusting to that, I'm afraid.
Perhaps a lesson to be learned here. You were from originally Yugoslavia, which then eventually broke up into different states, and one of them is Serbia, which is where your roots are. You lived in Iraq, and you've lived in Libya, and all three countries sort of descended into civil war at one point, and life in general, in most cases, life doesn't seem to be any better than it was before when the country was united, before any sort of civil war or war broke out in all three countries.
Yes, I think, sadly, that was a mistake of the Western world. Mm-hmm. Other outside influences by the superpowers at that time, some of which still are superpowers, who thought they could reorganize the country to be better, because they had little knowledge or hardly any knowledge about the culture of the people, the mentality of the people they were dealing with, sadly made a mess out of everything. For example, we lived in Iraq, in Baghdad, mm-hmm. and my mother was one of the interpreters who worked on the military hospitals in Baghdad that were being built. And that, obviously, being military hospitals, they had underground shelters, underground bunkers, which were necessary because of their military background. So my mother knew, she was one of those team of people who knew that there weren't any weapons of mass destruction.
In Iraq?
In Iraq, there weren't. And yet, sadly, Bush's and Blair's politics at that time, reason for going on to Iraq, excuse for going on to Iraq, was because they wanted to destroy the weapons of mass destruction that Saddam Hussein had. Which ultimately, once they found out that he never did have, they went up publicly on public media and said, oops, sorry, we didn't find them. They didn't have them after all. But in the meantime, they destroyed the country.
Your view there is seems to be generally accepted nowadays on the case of Iraq, although, as we said earlier in the program, in a way, Saddam Hussein did start the ball rolling when he went into Kuwait in 91, which was a mistake, and the 2003 invasion by these Western countries, which led to all this, all these problems, was a sort of consequence of that later on. But also in Libya, there seems to be a lack of unity now and many problems after Western countries helped the rebels remove that central authority. And do you feel that there was Western, shall we say, meddling that also led to the Yugoslav civil wars to some extent or another?
Yes, I do, simply because the country is rich in natural resources. Coal is rich in coal, wood, gas, which are natural resources that other Western countries would need, and so there was the intention of trying to obtain these at a pittance price.
So, after Marshal Tito died and ethnic tensions starting to rise, you feel that certain Western powers exploited these ethnic tensions and for the purpose of getting resources at very low prices?
Put it this way, they certainly encouraged these tensions. They may not have had a direct influence in them boiling over, but they certainly did not discourage them, and yes, they encouraged them. They couldn't wait for the country to be ripped to pieces. In fact, so much so that they immediately and very quickly recognized Slovenia as an independent country, Croatia as an independent country, Serbia as an independent country, just so that it would not be a united country that it was before the Civil War.
And what's your opinion on the situation in all these different countries now?
It's, Colin, it's difficult for me to form an opinion about that simply because I remember the old Yugoslavia. I had not been back to my home country for a good 30 years at all. When I did go back, I went back to Serbia 3 years ago. I got an opportunity from the company that I'm working with at the moment. There was a potential business opportunity over there. And even though English is officially a business language and it's used worldwide as a business language, my directors thought that me being native Serbian, I could be an asset in translating anything that would be needed on the spot, you know, just to facilitate business discussions. So they sent me together with a team of colleagues, and we went over there, and we went to Belgrade, which is my hometown, and it was very emotional. It was very, very emotional for me. If somebody had asked me what I would be looking for from my childhood memories in Belgrade, apart from obviously knowing that our family flat over there was lost because refugees had moved in and we had no one to turn to claim it back as ours, so we just gave everything up, I would not be able to answer what I would particularly look for. But I do recall an interesting incident. I was one of the afternoons, I had some free time, so I went to the main Belgrade's center, main thoroughfare, a little bit like Republic Street, what we have in Valletta. It's called Knez Mihailova. It's named after Prince Mihailo. And there are lots of boutiques and shops and restaurants and cafes, very much like Republic Street. So I went to that main thoroughfare, and I'm just walking around and just absorbing the general atmosphere. And I pass this little hat shop. Small hole in the wall sort of thing. And now I love hats and scarves and handbags. And I do a double take. I go back and I say, okay, I have to take a photograph of this because this is a memory from my memory bank. Now, I wasn't 100% sure. So I took a photo, came back to Malta, showed it to my mum, and she told me that shop was where you always stopped to look at the shop window every time we were in this street. You know, and I was a kid.
Yes, and it was implanted in your memory.
And it was in my memory bank. Now, if somebody had asked me, would you be looking for that, I would not have remembered before. But because I saw it again, it struck a chord in my memory bank. Now, tying in with your previous comment, what do I think about the other countries now, Slovenia, Croatia, I have not had yet the I would love to visit them again to see what differences there are. You know, I have followed that both Slovenia and Croatia have a booming tourism industry, for example, and they're beautiful countries, beautiful nature. Croatia has a fantastic access to the Adriatic Sea, for example. I remember beautiful beaches, wonderful islands, lovely people, very welcoming. Slovenia, the same thing. You know, they had their mountains, forests, lakes, beautiful countryside. Bosnia-Herzegovina, unfortunately, I have never had the opportunity of going to, but I would like to one day, yes.
So when you were a child, everybody was Yugoslav, but they all had their, I am Slovenian Yugoslav. People had their ethnicity, and they all sort of lived without squabbling amongst themselves.
Well, there was not... an emphasis was not placed on ethnicity.
Mm-hmm.
We were all Yugoslav.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing was that when you asked a person, okay, so where in Yugoslavia do you come from? Where do you live in Yugoslavia? Then they would say, okay, I'm from Zagreb, which is the capital of Croatia, or I'm from Ljubljana, which is the capital of Slovenia, or I'm from Sarajevo. You know, and then you would sort of, you could relate to their ethnic origins, but otherwise the first information was I'm Yugoslav.
That's it.
Did not make any difference. No. Like I said, I have fantastic Slovenian friends, Croatian friends, Bosnian friends who I practically grew up with. We actually met outside of Yugoslavia, and we have never made this ethnic difference between us. It's not what the man in the street ever wanted. This is all, unfortunately, role of politics gone wrong, gone totally wrong.
Edin tisamaw il-program Minajnejn Barranin fuq Campus FM li x-xandar kullnar ta' tlieta fit-tminja ta' filgħaxija b'repetizzjoni l-ħamis fl-10 ta' filgħodu kif ukoll jitstab fuq is-sit elettroniku ta' Campus FM. This program is called Minajnejn Barranin, Malta Through Foreign Eyes. It is broadcast every Thursday at 8 p.m. with a repetition every Saturday at 10 a.m. on Campus FM 103.7. Or it's also available online at the Campus FM Malta website. If you feel you can contribute to this program by being interviewed and offering your own insights, please write to us here at campusfm@um.edu.mt. That's email campusfm@um.edu.mt. Your life in Malta now, we have a lot of divisions here, which you've been witness to and probably are part of now that you have a Maltese passport. What's your opinion of our divisions, our little squabbles between ourselves, whether it's politics or football or festi?
Well, it's interesting to watch the daily life and follow the news, you know, daily, and some snippets I find a little bit baffling, like, for example, this whole polemic about hunting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't. I'm against hunting.
Yes.
I'm against hunting, and I just can't understand why it's even
an issue.
To be honest with you, I mean, it just, for me, it just does not make sense for such a small island that hardly has any animals anyway to want to kill what little there mm-hmm. would be flying over or what little there would exist anyway. But
Hunting does exist in every country.
Yeah, it does. It does exist in every country. It exists also in my country. But then one cannot compare the vast, vast acres of forest land to, again, the size of Malta. It's, okay. It's just a little bit, you know,
so there's a bit more
different
space and...
There's probably more opportunity for animals to
regenerate yes,
than there would be here.
Yeah,
you know. So. So that does baffle me. And then the politics.
So what is it? Have you found yourself becoming part of it? And as the years went by and you understood it more, perhaps, have you found yourself becoming any part of it at all, or do you still look at it from a perspective that leaves you baffled?
Well, I don't participate in politics at all. I just follow it because I just find it, in inverted commas, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Just see what's going on. Being Maltese, now having a Maltese passport, I have the right to vote, and I did vote in the last couple of elections. And it was just interesting from that perspective to see just the general results and to see how things were going to develop.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, I look at the political sphere from an external point of view, and I don't get into it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get into it. I don't have strong opinions either way, one way or the other. I believe that any party has good and not so good.
But do you feel that your Maltese friends and colleagues are not of the same opinion?
Well, I have a lot of friends and colleagues who are fervent supporters of either party, and it's comical. Sometimes to watch the interaction between them and the discussion between them and how committed they are to their party, which is good. You know, it's good for people to believe strongly in something and to support strongly something. If they believe that what they're doing is good, good luck to them. To each their own.
But do they find your position baffling to them?
Sometimes they try to convince me to turn to their camp, you know, whatever camp that is. Sometimes they try to convince me to turn to their camp, and I get the sometimes direct question, so who did you vote for? Sometimes the indirect question, so you voted. Ah, okay, so who do you think is going to come up, you know? So I try to diplomatically... either give a diplomatic answer, non-committal answer, because I think that voting is a private matter, and I keep it that way. But yes, we do have sometimes general discussions, which I try not to go too deep into, because I generally find that discussing politics can divide a conversation.
What about languages? You mentioned French. You obviously know. Would it be Serbian?
It's Serbian-Croatian. Sorry, I was brought up, and I was taught when I was brought up. I was taught Serbian-Croatian. I used to go to evening classes because it was compulsory, and this I agree with fully, for expatriate children, Yugoslavs who are living abroad. We could attend in the international school during the day, but two or three times a week we were obliged to go to the Yugoslav club, where we were given lessons in history, geography and our language.
Mm-hmm.
So that helped us not to forget where we come from, our roots, our history, our culture and most importantly our language. So yes, I am also fluent in Serbo-Croatian. I speak Serbo-Croatian, read and write both the Latin and the Cyrillic alphabet.
And English, obviously, which you picked up at the international school, and other languages?
French I'm also fluent in, so those three languages I studied in school. Then I also took on Spanish in sixth form, so I got my O-level in Spanish, love the language. Italian I did not study in school, and Maltese I did not study in school, but I picked them up living here.
Mm-hmm.
Malta being at the crossroads, you know, in the center of the Mediterranean crossroads, you get a lot of the, very close to Italy, you get a lot of Italian channels, both on television and on radio.
Mm-hmm.
And being a Latin root language, which helped me pick it up because I know I am fluent in French.
And can you hold the conversation in Maltese?
Iva melele. Non c'è problema. Very. Dice anche me qui mati o con.
Excellent. That's fantastic.
Ma
importante.
E che hai due lì almeno.
Probably people find you shall we say, some people find you cute because of the accent, but my main point is probably learning the language has helped you integrate better and people made you feel more welcome.
It's a very interesting point.
Or shall I say, people made you feel more welcome quicker.
Yes, it's a very interesting point. I managed to pick up Maltese having lived with the Maltese family. They did their best. I mean, they spoke English to me because I was very young. I was 11 and 12. But they obviously spoke Maltese between them, and I started to participate in their conversations. Now, Maltese is a very interesting language, and a lot of foreigners says, oh, it's so difficult to learn it. Yes, it's not easy to learn, granted. However, because I had lived previously in Baghdad, in Iraq, and I picked up the Iraqi dialect of the language there. You know how kids are, they're like sponges, they just absorb everything, they love to learn. So I picked up that language, that helped me with the Maltese. It's the Arabic intonation of the language. So the guttural sounds, the double consonants were not foreign to me. I was used to that sound. So I found myself integrating quicker with the Maltese family, with their kids. They had four kids, so I was the fifth one. I found myself integrating quicker with them by making the effort to speak with them in Maltese, even though I made mistakes. My good fortune was that when I did make mistakes, they corrected me.
Yeah, of course.
Yes, and I appreciated that very much.
Now tell me about the 90s, perhaps those 2 years when you, that was the 80s, the first 2 years you spent here. So that was your childhood, it was school and the family. Maybe you can tell me a little bit about those 2 years, your impressions of Malta. But then when you moved here later on in life and stayed here permanently, tell me about the first few years of your life here when you were at high school and integrating, and how hard or easy it was.
When in the early 80s, it's difficult for a child to judge, really, because you're still discovering so much about life and so much about people. Perhaps I was luckier than most in that I had already been exposed to different cultures. So not only my Serbian culture, which, because I had left at such a young age, 2.5, I didn't remember much of. So what I do remember, it would be from my mother's upbringing. But then there is the Hindu culture, because we had lived for 2.5 years in India, the Iraqi culture, because we had lived for so many years in Baghdad, and then I came to Malta. So integrating for me, or adapting for me, was not an issue, really. What I looked for was friendship, which is what I found. What I looked for was acceptance, which is what I found. Having a certain comfort zone, which is what I found. So those were the factors that I needed as a child, as an 11-year-old, when I was here first. That is what I looked for, and that is what I found. So for me, they were two memorable years. The only snag, as I mentioned before, was that my mum was not around, and me being an only child, naturally, I missed her, and I missed her a lot.
And then you came back as a young woman, and that was you were starting to put down some roots. And that's when you were sort of striking out on your own as well, because you were not in the bosom of a Maltese family. So how was that, and how was the process over the years of you integrating into Maltese society?
That was the beginning of living, if you could call it that way. I had, when I had come back to enroll in high school, I had stopped living with a Maltese family, and I had shared a flat with another Yugoslav friend of mine. That is when I started learning all about what responsibility really means and looking after yourself really means. So I was given an allowance by my mother, monthly allowance, to pay for the monthly expenses like rent and food and school fees and books, etc. And what was remaining, then I could go out with friends if I economized well. Which a lot of the times, unfortunately, I didn't. But anyhow, so that was a very, very positive life experience. As you remember, I was in sixth form here, and I formed a lot of friendships which last to this very day, which I'm grateful for. I was never made to feel like a total foreigner.
Never at all.
I was never made to feel like a total foreigner, not during my school years. Mm-hmm. That is very interesting. The first time I felt like I did not belong,
yes,
and but for a short period, was when I started working here. Mm-hmm. And then I started interacting with an older generation of Maltese, mm-hmm. Who, because I had no fixed roots here, i.e. I had no Maltese family here, I did not have any Maltese blood in me, found it in the beginning a little bit difficult. How were they expected to interact with me?
This is a very interesting point. Could you elaborate?
Well, the questions I was asked is, oh, okay, so you come from Yugoslavia at that time. Yugoslavia, okay, so how did you end up in Malta? So the usual chit-chat. So you have no Maltese relatives? No. No Maltese blood? No. And then you could see the quizzical look in their eyes, like, okay, so where do I place her?
Perhaps if you had been Italian or British, they would have felt that you had more of a right to be here because of the British colonial connection or the Italian family or neighbor connection. But Yugoslavia, what's a Yugoslav person doing in Malta? Is that the kind of thing you could see going through their mind?
Yes, I could see that they were uncertain what association was I supposed to have with the island. And then more so when I told them that I originally came here for school. Oh, so it was like, so why Malta? You know. So anyhow, it was always a good icebreaker, yeah, in a way.
But it wasn't negative.
No, it was not negative at all. It was just that there was a certain reservation, mm-hmm, initially.
Until they got to know you and felt more comfortable.
Until they got to know me better, but mm-hmm, then, to give everyone credit, and until I got to know them better too.
Ooh, okay.
You know, so yes, mm-hmm, it always works both ways. Mm-hmm. But then when they got to know me better, when they saw that I made the effort to also approach them in their language, I did my job diligently, I didn't upset any waters, you know, I didn't want anyone to feel threatened just because I'm here. Mm-hmm. I wasn't here to take anybody's job, mm-hmm, you know. So then it was much better. Then they felt safer to approach me in a more welcoming way.
And in your spare time as well, apart from work, I believe you got involved in the theatre scene, which has become a very important part of your life, if I'm not mistaken.
I've enjoyed participating in the Maltese theatre scene very much. I find it rewarding. I find it stimulating. It's a hobby I love. It's a hobby that relaxes me. I learn a lot from it, but it's not a hobby that I would want to make my full-time career.
Mm-hmm. Not in Malta or not anywhere?
I don't think I'd want to do that as a full-time anywhere, to mm-hmm be honest with you. Maybe because since I started off with enjoying it as a hobby, mm-hmm, so much, I don't want to lose that fresh approach every time. I don't want it to become a monotonous, daily, arduous, perhaps job-related task for me.
Could you mention some of the popular plays and theatrical productions you've been involved in so that people can perhaps say, oh yes, I remember watching her in that?
Well, most recently I did the play which was performed for the evenings on campus. It was called The Audition. Mm-hmm. That's something I did most recently. Before that, I also did radio plays at the MEDC club rooms. I took part in a couple of pantos, one on stage, some backstage. I've also done quite a bit of backstage work. Took part in South Pacific, also musical.
So you've done a lot of stuff with the MADC?
I have done a lot of stuff with MADC. I have done some stuff with other clubs. I also did one scholastic year with Masquerade.
Mm-hmm.
I also had a role in Malta's first feature horror film, Breeder. That was quite an experience. That was quite a fun, interesting, and novel experience.
That was in 2014, was it?
That's right. That
and directed by Patrick.
Patrick Vella.
That's right.
Yes. That was.
It was shown in cinemas.
It was shown in local cinemas. It started off being shown in local cinemas, and then it was taken abroad. And it's currently doing a very successful run of South America. It's competing in the Amazon Horror Awards.
Oh.
So we're waiting for the results of that one to see what will happen with that one. It won a couple of awards in a couple of horror festivals in the States because it is a particular genre.
Yes.
You know, you need to enroll it in the genre that it belongs to,
yes,
which is horror. But yes, it's a very interesting project.
Were you a scream queen, a victim, or or were you a hero? Or
well, actually, my son was a victim. Sadly, unfortunately, and I played the role of a desperate mother wanting to know what happened to her son who had disappeared.
Okay, let's not give any more spoilers then for those who haven't seen it yet. I'm speaking to Aleksandra Radulović, who was born in Serbia, then Yugoslavia, has lived in Iraq and Libya, amongst other countries, and has been in Malta living permanently since the early 90s. And has a Maltese passport and considers herself both Serbian and Maltese. She has dual nationality. Aleksandra, just a small point about your surname, Radulović. Sometimes I'm watching American television and there's an American person with Yugoslav heritage whose surname is pronounced, one person I can think of is the American comedian Weird Al Yankovic, who on American TV and in movies is referred to as Yankovic. Is that the right way to pronounce it? Or you pronounce your surname Radulović, so are the Americans wrong?
Yes, I'm afraid in this instance they are wrong. Simply because in our Slav culture, in the Eastern European culture, the Vich at the end of the surname stands for recognition of whose son or daughter you are. For example, in the Russian culture, it is a lot more distinctive. You would have a son of Nikolai having the surname Nikolaevich, and you would have daughter of Nikolai having the surname, for example, Nikolaevna. That would distinguish whose son or daughter they are. In my case, Radul Radulović. My father's name is not Radul, my father's name is Milan, by the way. But anyway, it's a family surname. I find this particular point interesting, drawing a similarity with other cultures. For example, we have mentioned, I have lived in the Middle East for a while and I have been exposed to Arab cultures. Now, Arab culture has that similarity also in indicating the roots of a family who you are related to, for example. But then they do it in the reverse. They, for example, never called my mother by her name, which is Nevenka. They always called my mother Sandra. I was called Sandra when I was in Iraq. They always called her Sandra, which means the mother of Sandra. It's a very respectful way.
Yes.
Now, if I was a boy, and for example, if my name was Robert, so to speak, my mother would have been called Robert.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
You know, so it's very interesting. If my mother had other children, she would have been called by the name of her firstborn. So it's always a firstborn.
And what about father? What would the father be called?
If I'm not mistaken, Abu.
Abu.
Abu Sandra,
Sandra.
Or Abu Robert. If I'm not mistaken, it's Abu
in the
Arab culture. So Abu and Abu Sandra. interesting parallel, perhaps, with the Maltese culture is your use of nicknames, or was perhaps your use of nicknames. I don't find
not
that
so much anymore,
now,
but
no,
it still
not
exists.
Not so much anymore, mm-hmm. but it does exist.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
you have certain families being known by a particular
nickname.
So I find that very interesting, despite the fact that we are different nationalities, different countries separated by so many miles of territory, and yet the cultures do have similar traits. Mm. And that is very interesting to see.
So far we've been very positive. Is there something you absolutely dislike about Malta and wish could be changed? And if there is, do you have any advice or suggestions on how to go about it?
Corruption.
Mm-hmm.
Corruption, sadly, although it exists everywhere, I know, but seems to be a lot more prominent here. I wonder, is that due to the size of the society? Is that due to everybody's passionate involvement in some type of offshoot of a political sphere? I'm not too sure about that. I haven't pinned mm-hmm. the reason to it. But I find that there seems to be a relatively high level of...
You mean things getting done because people know other people rather than things happening because they should be happening?
Yes, that's right. That's exactly what I mean. It's connections, but connections being taken to a whole different mm-hmm. level.
And do you find that there is no recourse you can go to? Some place that you can go to air any grievances and get satisfaction?
You could, and there are places you could go to air your grievances, but unfortunately they seem to take a long time to get resolved.
Mm.
So I think, from what I have heard, I have never experienced such a situation myself, luckily, but from what I was told and what I have heard through grapevines, the process is long, arduous, and most often than not, the plaintiff would just give up.
Okay, let's go back to the positive then. What are the things you absolutely love and adore about Malta?
The people are very welcoming. Distances are not far. Weather.
Mm-hmm. Even in January, February, windy, rainy.
Well, you get the seasons everywhere. And those, you know, flood seasons, rainy seasons, whatever, I mean, they don't last mm-hmm. a long time, luckily. I mean, you get sunshine
yes.
so many days of the year. Much more days of the year than you would get grey clouds, grey days. Mm-hmm. The sea, yes. Perhaps not the massive stretch of sandy beaches, because sadly we have few of those, but definitely the crystal clear waters of the blue sea around us. I dive, I'm a paddy rescue diver, mm-hmm. and it's one of my hobbies that I do enjoy when I can, when I have the time for it. Visibility is very good. You get to see a lot of marine life, a lot of coral life, and it is a whole new world, yes.
Do you believe you'll be living in Malta for the foreseeable future, perhaps the rest of your life, and perhaps raise a family here? Or would you think it would be better to do that somewhere else, had you to make that decision?
Yes, another point I wanted to mention, which I find very positive about the country, is its level of safety.
Mm.
Compared to other European countries, one feels very safe here, and one is very safe here. I mean, for example, a person on their own can walk very late at night from St. Julian's all the way to Valletta without having negative incidents happening. Things are being resolved, things are being sorted. If something negative does happen, the authorities are doing their best to try to sort that out. There's always room for improvement, that exists everywhere, obviously. So yes, I would highly recommend Malta to foreigners who would want to also bring their families here, bring their kids here. I would love to have my own family one day, God willing. And I wouldn't hesitate to remain living here. That said, I would also welcome the opportunity, if that does happen, of experiencing working in a different country to Malta. Because so far, my work life has been limited to here. But it's just because of the size of the country and the amount of opportunities, or should I say limited opportunities, that would exist here on the work front. So I would welcome the opportunity to experience that in a different country, but I would always want to come back.
For various reasons, whether marriage or work or because of the wars of the 90s, the Balkan community in Malta is quite extensive. There are quite a few people, even from Serbia. You're the country you were born in. Is there a Serbian community that you form part of? Do you have a group of Serbian friends or an association of some sort that you are involved in or are aware of?
Actually, sadly, no. Possibly because I was in Malta a lot longer than before, than when they arrived, because I was not an economic emigree and I was not a civil war emigree. I came here for schooling. Mm-hmm. So I had already formed some roots here before they arrived. So sadly, no, I don't. However, I have some interaction with some Serbians here, but they are not strong friendships. They are acquaintances, mm-hmm. more. And they have told me that there is a Serbian Orthodox priest who lives in Italy, in Rome, and he comes for the important calendar, religious calendar festivities, like for Christmas and for Easter. You know, we follow the Julian calendar, which is 14 days after the Gregorian calendar. So our Christmas comes 14 days after the 25th of December and the 7th of January, and our New Year comes on the 14th of January. Mm-hmm. So he comes down in January to celebrate Mass for those special events. I have yet to attend that Mass. Like I said, I'm not a fervently religious person. But it's on my to-do list.
Aleksandra Radulović, thank you very much for being on Minajnein Barani.
Grazie.